Blog Talk Radio.
Nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together, they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. How's everybody doing?
Hey, Austin.
Doing good?
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Sounds good. I think that we're free of technical difficulties today, so I'll go ahead and jump into the opening riff. This is from a Quo session on November 12, 1989. Indeed, the intellect is often the master, even of the most devoted spiritual seeker. Burdened with the rational mind, the seeker often places too little emphasis on the freeing up of deep energies, of keeping open those passageways from spiritual self to mental, emotional, and spiritual self. The creation is consciousness, and that consciousness is pure emotion, not the pure intellect. Infinite intelligence expresses itself within incarnation as deep and abiding emotion. Thus, as one feels love pouring through one, one is fulfilling one's fundamental and major mission upon your earth sphere, and that is to be a radiant being, a light to many, not by action, but by the vital energy, the sweetness of soul, and the expressions of love which move through the seeker who has opened the door to deep emotion.
Thank you, Austin. We all find it so easy to talk about intuition, emotion, mysticism, all those words that have no objective reference. Nobody can point to something and say that is mysticism or this is emotion. It's purely subjective. Now, if schools thought about this, it would drive them crazy because they couldn't test it. Perhaps you all remember going in for tests to test your intelligence or to test how well you could do at something. It was fairly easy to test that. not just testing for one particular subject, but testing for one's ability to pick up on ideas and play with them. I remember part of a IQ test that I was given when I was 5, I think. The lady gave me a quiz that was formed of squares, circles, different shapes. And she told me to look at it, and I looked at it. I don't know how long I had to look at it, but I spent my time looking at it and observing how it was put together. And then she took it all apart and told me to put it back together. Well, one of the things that I had noticed about this arrangement was that it was symmetrical and that I only had to remember how half of it was made. So I memorized half of it. And when I was told to put it back together, I did my memory thing, putting that half together. And then I copied from one side to the other until I had the whole necklace. This was considered an intellectual feat of far beyond my years. And I thought to myself then, I wonder why exactly. At any rate, people think that they can test the intellect. And they're usually pretty accurate enough to base a lot of schooling on it. You get IQ tested, and you get put in various programs based on whether you're an advanced student, an average student, or a slow student. And people don't usually surprise you because the tests are pretty good. How do you test the depth of emotion? Certainly we know that we have emotion. How much of it is learned? How much of it is shallow? Much of it is instinctual. Consequently, the challenges with which the Confederation material leave us are incredible. Because we are supposed to know ourselves, not intellectually, not so that we can write it down, but how else does one know oneself? What do we do when we run out of words? Pure emotion has no words. I think that the reason we are encouraged so often in the Confederation material to move into the silence is that the silence is a kingdom of emotion. We cannot talk. The kingdom of nature into being one iota other than it is. We can endlessly describe it. We can seem to understand it because we sound so good. But until we become comfortable without words, we have no real intimacy with nature. And silence is dearly bought. I don't recall where I read this. I think it was in some forgotten magazine article. But the author was writing about being alone. It could have been Annie Dillard, I'm not sure. At any rate, in order to shake off the power of words in her life, she simply shut off contact with the world and spent her time alone. She did not give herself an easy time of it, but she shut herself off in one room. And she remembers fighting as if for her very life to retain her sanity during the first 3 days of solitude. Finally, on the fourth day, she found herself comfortable. And rested. Without thinking. And without the desire to sleep. And she knew that somehow she had blazed a trail into the depths of herself. I'm not sure what it would take me to do the same thing. It might take me longer. I can spend time in silence, but I'm very chatty inside myself. As I seek in the silence, I seek always to go deeper. And I don't know how far I've gotten. I do know from experience with one pure emotion, that of grief, that when an emotion has been purified, it is beautiful. Even when it is dark in color, it becomes as beautiful as the dark colors that are used in a dark canvas. I believe there's a 16th century canvas called Night Watchman. It is a face barely seen. It has haunted artists for centuries and is considered a classic. In general, I think artists deal with a deeper foray into emotion, intuition, and mysticism than do those who, as Ra said, enjoy the use of measure and pen. I'm not sure all writers are mystics. A good deal of scholarly writing, for example, is simply putting one foot in front of the other, going from one footnote to the next, and explaining to someone who has not studied what the ramifications of a certain subject are. Put most of my writing in that category. Yet there is some artistry, some creativity, some deeper strain within me that is tapped when I channel. When I deliberately go beyond what I know. And allow myself to be used. By energies from a realm I trust. And have tested vigorously. Music often strikes me as being pure emotion. And I think there is something very life-giving about some kinds of music. Where have I read that some music makes plants grow better, makes people think better, and so forth. At any rate, when we are attempting the knowing of the self in the way that the Law of One and the Confederation material in general speak of it, we are attempting to go beyond words, to enter the silence, and eventually to come through that process in joy. Although, hang on, Austin, although joy is a very subjective thing, I think that people recognize it in others and see the radiance of being that people who have joy offer. And I wonder if it's not the most beautiful gift on earth, full sharing of that joy.
Thank you so much for that, Carla. Our first question today comes from Lonnie D. from Facebook. Before I get to his questions, I want to give a big thank you to Lonnie in his desire to help share the Law of One. He has started his own Instagram to help share Law of One quotes. If you're interested on looking at his Instagram, the username is simply the Law of One with underscores instead of spaces. Lonnie asks, 2012 has passed, and I've noticed in the lead up to and since then, more and more people awakening to truth and following their hearts. People seem to demand more transparency and accountability from their leaders and governments, but at the same time, I'm seeing a larger push from governments to control the people. Will this trend continue, or will there be some final split in which we will be able to live harmoniously with each other of like minds? In other words, will this heaven on earth only exist in 4D, and we will be there in 3D in a constant battle of service to self elites trying to take control? Many still speak of an event, and it sounds nice, but I am cautious to believe because of negative forces influencing channels. I know the moment contains love and heaven is within my perception, but let's be honest here. Although we shall never give up, we are tired. I would appreciate any feedback or comments on the outcome of this and any spiritual principles as to why, even after the supposed 2012 date, that not much has changed in our illusion. And if some grand event is to take place, how would this change the course of our spiritual evolution in regard to the amount of catalyst we currently receive from our service to self elites?
Anybody feel strongly enough to take this instead of me first?
Well, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, Ra was talking about the activity of service to self entities toward the end of the cycle as being more intensive and would seem like there was much more, shall we say, of such service to self entities and actions than there really is, because the service to others types of entities tend to allow others to have their free will instead of pushing forth for their own to be expressed. So as we move toward the what Ra called the harvest, it will seem apparently like there is more of this type of activity going on, but there is also a great deal more service to others type of activity that is happening if you pay attention to different groups and entities around the country and around the world. You hear of people doing wonderful things, helping people in Northern Africa to drill holes in the ground that gets water up to an area that hasn't had water. And right now there's a great outpouring of energy and effort to assist to those in the Philippines. There are people that do this for a living and for their life's calling. People that reach out in ways to give medicine, food, shelter, that have seemingly taken it upon themselves to be of service to others in ways that seem to be just very normal, natural, and helpful, and yet because they are doing it as a way of living, it's impressive, and I'm sure it's having a very positive effect upon the planet and all of the population as well. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that there will seem like there's a lot of negative entities around, but there's a lot more positivity. And that's what we can really take heart from.
I will follow Jim and take a go at it. Austin, can you guys hear me?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
That would be a no.
I said I'll follow up Jim with my own response. I wanted to make sure you guys could hear me. So apparently I'm coming through.
I can hear you now.
So some of my answer will overlap with Jim's a bit. And I wanted to say that in 1859, a famous British author opened his book with the words, "It was the best of times, it was the worst of times." Now, in 2013, I think that Lanny speaks to this same seemingly mutually exclusive set of perceptions regarding our times. Things are getting better, things are getting worse. So Lanny asks, essentially, when will this situation end? He, like so many sincere individuals attempting to live life from the open heart is wary and ready for a more harmonious and love-filled collective experience. In 63.25, for those not familiar with Toby's numbering system, that's session 63, Q&A 25 from the Law of One, Rod describes our situation as one of partial activation of the fourth density sphere. In that situation, I surmise, both polarities have an intensified opportunity to polarize, and this touches on what Jim was speaking to. So that is to say, those of service to others have an increased opportunity to serve others. Those of service to self, likewise, have an increased opportunity to serve the self. Naturally, then, manifestations of both polarities will be simultaneously perceived as increasing in this world, increasing control, increasing transparency, increasing fear, increasing love. This intensification is not just for the experience of polarized consciousness, but also for the vast majority in the third camp, those who have not chosen to polarize. Here, the effects, I would guess, may intensify in either direction, towards the increase in the desire for sleep and comfort, or for those nearing harvestability, for the opportunity to cross the vibratory threshold into a polarized identity. Personally, I've seen oscillations in my own perceptions between feelings of defeat and hopelessness and powerlessness in the face of a world that continues seemingly to choose and more or less support service to self leadership on one hand, and ridiculous levels of unbridled optimism in the possibility of a paradise to manifest here on this world, a paradise of compassion and clarity and community. I personally am going to bank on the latter and ascribe limitations on my point of view to the former being defeat and hopelessness. Lanny says, many still speak of an event, and it sounds nice, but I am cautious to believe because of negative forces influencing channels. In my personal opinion, I believe no one walking on this planet today knows what precisely will happen and how the transition into fourth density will unfold. Therefore, I don't know if a singular event in our third density space-time, wherein we all cross that discrete boundary described by Ra and move into the next density, will transpire. What I would speak to is the temptation that such an idea presents to the battle-scarred and wary entity. How many of us have been on this journey for incarnation after incarnation? How much suffering? How many injuries received? How many expectations not met? How much pain? How appealing, then, is the idea of being saved by a rapturous, externally imposed event? No more suffering. No more outer play of confusion and sorrow. No more death. Only freedom, joy, true life, true love, peace at last, is an ancient common hope, I think. One not unique to the wanderer, suffering under the weight of systems of oppression and suffering inflicted by others and by the self. Humanity as a whole, I would venture, has yearned for an end to the imprisonment of limited and beaten identity. Now, I'm not saying that such a moment cannot or will not transpire, because I don't know. I am only saying that we should be mindful of the psychological need for the ultimate escape and the enormous appeal that such an escape offers to the physical-bound entity who, at base, fears death and suffering. I am saying that within the boundaries of free will, we came here to help transform this world, not to seek the exit, not to await an ascension. That concludes my response.
I would like to speak to the part of this question, which is actually complex, that has to do with what precisely happened at the winter solstice of 2012. And I'm not sure it can be said enough that Ra's intention was to talk about the transfer from third density to fourth density of the planet itself, the quality of the sun, the quality of light has changed. And that is enormous, and yet it is not obvious to us except statistically in terms of our science, because we don't have the measure and pen created yet to measure unknown qualities of light. But it is my understanding that we are now living in fourth density. This is it. And there could have been a planetary magnetic switch, such as Edgar Cayce predicted was going to happen at the turn of the century. And in the readings that we've had, it was suggested that what stopped that from happening was the onset of so many groups like ours, so many groups where there was an intention set up together to imagine the world a better place, to create of the world through our imagination a better place, to lighten the consciousness of planet Earth. And that this enabled and is still enabling our Earth to release the heat that had been generated by millennia of empire and anger and suffering and a lot of angry emotion ground into the emotional energy of the planet. It has to let that go. But it's being able to do that by small increments so that the whole Earth isn't destroyed at once. The other thing that I would respond to is, I have finished talking about what's going to happen to us poor third density 3D folks wandering around the planet being third density in the fourth density world. About the only thing that enables us to take advantage of fourth density light is to live our lives according to fourth density values. This, if done consistently day after day after day, hour after hour, minute after minute, will begin to link up the DNA within ourselves in a cellular level and create more of an ability to use that light that tells the truth and gives us so much more information. Obviously, we're not doing great at it. And I'm not doing any better than anybody else. But I do think that everybody does feel worn and battle-scarred. Everybody does feel tired. But still the answer remains the same. And that is to move into the silence and to find that quality within that is the pure love and light of the infinite creator. It has been variously described as radiancy and love and joy. When you think about it, if the creator is the Logos, and that one great original thought of the Logos is love, then the creation is an emotion with which we are not completely in sync. And so there remains a tremendous amount of distortion, is the word Ra would use. To lessen the distortion is to make use of the silence and to find that ridiculous optimism that Gary was speaking of. I also feel that joy, and it also for me comes from sheer moments of plunging into silence with a prayerful request that I may go deeper. One thing I do recommend to everybody is not to do this alone, because it is so much harder to do it alone. When you're working with a group, even if the group is two or three, you are at least doubling your strength or tripling your strength. The fourth person quadruples it, I suppose, and so forth. It's amazing how quickly the energy of love heats up and overcomes the objective outer universe. Every year at homecoming, when we have enough people here to have everyone feeding off of everyone else's optimism, there develops a feeling of beauty and truth and home that makes everyone feel ecstatic. If it can be done for a weekend, why can it not be done for a lifetime? It is simply a matter of our staying on target, I think. And whether we're doing it by ourselves or whether we're doing it with a group, continuing the meditation, stubbornly and determinedly and without doubt, without allowing any doubt, simply moving into that state of mind as often and as deeply as possible. The more you do it, the more you know the truth. The more you create it in your lives, the more of your life it will create until eventually you are living in a very positive creation. It's certainly a subjective creation. And it can certainly be intellectually argued that it does not take into account everything that flies above the radar. That's true, it does not. But I don't think it makes it any less legitimate. Because that which seems to be objective is simply that that has grabbed the most headlines, the most importance, has the most power. And these are very glamorous things, you know. They're very glamorous. But do we want power? Do we want to be able to direct how the rest of the planet shall live? Or do you want to have the freedom to direct how we shall live? I think I would rather bumble on my own towards whatever subjective joy I feel that I find. And there ends Carla's statement on it. Let's see, who hasn't said anything?
I think I've got a little bit to add. I think it's really important what Jim said about how the Earth can seem so negative to positive entities. Ross said that we see it as a quiet horror on Earth. And it is true, like what Gary said, that while there's also a sharp increase of positive-oriented entities, there's a sharp increase of negatively oriented or polarized entities. But we're so inundated with information now, it's so easy to feel like the world is more violent and there's more suffering going on than ever before. But I've actually read recently in multiple articles that if you just take the statistical facts, people alive today are less likely to suffer from violence than any time in the past. Less nations are at war than at any time in the past. And we are actually decreasing in violence as we go further on into the future. So it's easy to see the violence around us, and I think it's not so easy to see the positive things. So I think it's important to actually go out and seek some of the positive things that are happening to help keep us balanced and stable. It's good to be aware of what's going on, but you can easily get inundated with negative news, I think.
I'm into that.
Anybody else have anything to add? Okay. Our next question, we have about 15 minutes left. Next question comes from Genevieve Averill P. From Facebook. She asks, I know how important it was to place the instrument just right during the channeling to have the best connection possible and not to drain the instrument. My question is this. Is it possible to achieve contact with Ra without such rituals or going into a trance state? Is it possible to connect on a higher level with Ra and just converse and remember it? I have a quote from Ra where Don asks how Ra performs their normal service, how they've normally given the Law of One in their interaction with Earth. And Ra says, we have used channels such as this one, but in most cases the channels feel inspired by dreams and visions without being aware consciously of our identity or existence. They also say at one point that we may either speak as we will or not speak at all. This demands a very tuned, shall we say, group. So the takeaway I would get from that is that while to get a direct line of communication with Ra in the way that the Law of One, it probably does require the types of rituals that were unique to the group to get that form of communication, but it's possible and other ways that Ra may be interacting in ways that are not realized.
Sounds good. I think the dreams have been the way that Ra has communicated with the population of this planet most frequently throughout their experience with Earth.
And to add to the quotes that Austin brought up, I would use these two from Ra. In 64.5, Ra says, this contact is narrow band and its preconditions precise. So that to me, suggests that there isn't a wide variance in the methods by which Ra can be contacted. The preconditions, what's necessary to undertake in order to get Ra on the line, essentially, are very limited, very precise. And Ra also hints at something unique about the instrument herself, Carla, that may have made Carla as an instrument more able to receive Ra in the unconscious trance state. In 30.17, Ra says, "As we scan the instruments, we find anomalies of the magnetic field which are distorted towards our ability to find narrow band channel into this instrument's mind-body-spirit complex." So it seems the way I read that is that Carla's magnetic field was distorted in such a way that it was it assisted Ra, it allowed Ra to communicate through her with some efficacy.
If I may just look back and see how it happened in our group, Don and I had both been working just as hard as we could since 70. Well, I mean, Don and I both had been part of a group that was aimed at discovering more truth via extraterrestrial contact since 62, but I was a librarian and I continued being a librarian throughout most of the 60s. Well, throughout the 60s. And in 1970, after Don and I had written a book together, he suggested that we make a contract with each other, a partnership. And that was because he was sure that our book was going to sell, and actually we ended up being able to paper our bathroom with a rejection slip. But he wanted to be sure that I got half of everything if we made any money from it. At any rate, he hired me away from librarianship. And so I became his co-researcher in the paranormal, trying to find out truth, more of truth, what was going on, what was happening, what was real, why were things as they were. It was the goal of Don's life. He was tuned from childhood, I would say, from about the age of 14, to seek the truth, and he was absolutely indefatigable. I was also an unusual character in that from childhood I sought to serve my own vision of the Creator, which was Jesus, and wanted only that, to be of service as he was of service, to follow in his footsteps. So you had two seekers in Don and me that had been working together, doing everything we knew how to do, making movies, writing books, and channeling. I learned channeling in 74, so that was also in there. Attempting to share, to find information and to share it with the world. And that was where we were for a long time. And in 1980, Jim joined the group, and 3 weeks later, the Ra contact began. Now, Jim was a very, very powerful individual. He still is. there's a tremendous amount of physical power, mental power, emotional power. He's a very powerful person. And I think that what was lacking before was the energy in me that it took to fuel that contact. So if you look at it, Jim fueled the raw contact. Without Jim, it would not have happened because I would not have had the physical energy to make that contact. I had the desire. I had that thing that you delicately call purity. And I had a gift for channeling, but none of it was enough without the physical energy that it took to stay focused long enough to hold that narrow band contact. So I think that the part of raw that you get without going through the rituals, going through a group, would be inspiration. And maybe you wake up inspired, but you don't know why. It's hard to make it last. I think the thing that made the contact with our group different was that in being able, through the group, the two tremendously powerful people that were with me, the Rock said one time that I was pure love, Don was pure wisdom, and Jim was pure power, and that it might help us to meditate on first one, then the other, to understand more and more about the nature of love. So we had the wisdom in the questioner, we had the love in the channel, but we didn't have the power, and that's why it took a group of three. And also, it takes a group of three to create material that is for everybody. If you are creating it by yourself, you're creating it in a way you can't help for yourself because you're biased in one way, and you are going to see things in one way. Even if they come through you, as you translate them into actual words from concept, you're going to translate them into words that are after your own point of view. When you have two people in a group, you find yourself balancing between the two. It's the energy of the two. And the balance of the two, and so you get that bias in the channeling. But when you have three, there's no way that there can be a limitation in the channeling. It universalizes the contact. And the more you have after that, as long as they're strong channels or strong batteries, to use the term the spiritualists use for those who are in the group simply because they're powerful the way Jim is, that's all to the good. But you need at least three. So I would say that you you probably might not need the same three, the same balance, you know, exactly the same thing that went on between Jim, Don, and me. And you certainly wouldn't need the orientation towards Christianity that the Ra offered me, because you might not have a channel that's oriented towards Christianity herself. However, I think that it is so that in order to get a group that can take the word, take the concepts that are so pure and translate them into words that don't have a bias, it does take at least three people in a group, if that helps any. Oops, we went over. It's time to quit.
We're getting close. We haven't gone over yet.
Oh, good. My clock is fast.
Did anybody else have anything to add to that?
In 90 seconds. I appreciate Carla giving me so much credit for helping the group get going, but I have a hunch that the three of us were necessary, and that whatever two of us were working together, if it were Don and I, then Carla shows up, then there would be a Ra contact, but not before. Or if Carla and I were working together, that there wouldn't be any Ra contact until Don showed up. So I think it was important that the three of us got together, and I think that was probably planned before the incarnation, and I think that, you know, a very happy coinciding of people and events.
Thank you so much. I can probably say for pretty much everybody that we are grateful for that pre-incarnative plan that you set forth. You've been listening to L Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will see you.